Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I'll be reading the Bloomington Normal Pantograph dated Tuesday, February 12th, 2019. Let's begin on the front page. There is a large photograph of a frozen lake with a person sitting on a bucket ice fishing. It says, "A fisherman sits atop thick ice on White Oak Park Lake last week. Recent cold weather has ice in the lake to a depth of around 6 inches in places. But due to the long-term effects of climate change, researchers are saying that this scene may be less likely to occur in the future as ice fails to cover the lakes in central Illinois." And the headline is, "Researcher says fewer lakes will freeze over." ISU's O'Reilly, water quality, food sources at risk of harm. Tens of thousands of northern hemisphere lakes that normally freeze over in the winter, including Lake Bloomington and Evergreen Lake, are at risk of going ice-free, harming water supplies, water quality, and food sources, as well as cultural, recreational, and economic activities, according to research involving an Illinois State University faculty member. Catherine O'Reilly, associate professor of geology, said the thing that was most surprising to her and the team of climate change researchers was the number of lakes that are going to be changing and the speed at which we're going to see this happen. She said on some of the lakes it's going to happen within a generation. The research published in the journal Nature Climate Change is an outgrowth of earlier studies that they have done on lake temperature trends. We wanted to figure out how many lakes will be affected by warming that they will lose their ice cover, she said. Researchers had more than 500 with ice records and looked at factors such as air temperature, lake depth, elevation, and shoreline complexity. Then they applied that to 1.4 million lakes in the cold winter zone that currently have annual or intermittent winter ice. The latter is defined as lakes with at least one ice-free year since 1970. The cold winter zone includes parts of Illinois, said O'Reilly, and Evergreen Lake and Lake Bloomington are right on the edge. The impact already is being seen in Wisconsin, in places such as Lake Geneva that already has more winters where it does not freeze over, she said. Winter lake ice acts as a temperature reset, explained O'Reilly. Without it, lakes warm up sooner and stay warmer at the end of the summer, she said. Warm water tends to be connected with algae blooms, she said, which cause water quality problems and can result in less oxygen in the water, harming fish. The reproductive success of fish that prefer cooler waters, such as walleye, trout, and salmon, will be strongly affected, she said. It's also an economic jolt. In 2011, $178 million was spent on ice fishing equipment in the U.S., notes the report. Thousands of ice festivals bring in money to their communities. For example, O'Reilly said ice festivals in Rochester, Minnesota raise about $340,000 a year. Activities such as ice fishing and skating or playing hockey on frozen lakes will disappear in areas that lose winter ice cover. They are a part of our cultural heritage. We're losing something that we have always had, she said, adding, "We have hit a tipping on some of the southern lakes. I don't think we can stop this from happening in those areas." But there is still time to take meaningful steps, she said. The United States could really be taking a lead on climate change issues, said O'Reilly. There are lots of opportunities for innovation. The conversational topic of climate change is receiving renewed attention in Washington, D.C., with Democrats taking over control of the U.S. House of Representatives. Last week, the House conducted its first committee hearings on the subject in 8 years. Speaker Nancy Pelosi has named 8 Democrats to serve on a special climate change committee, and 6 Republicans will be named later. Among the Democrats named to the House Select Committee on the Climate Crisis is newly elected Illinois Congressman Sean Casten of Downers Grove. O'Reilly said that it is important for individuals to take personal steps to lessen their environmental impact, but the changes are needed are institutional. U.S. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat, New York, and U.S. Senator Ed Markey, Democrat, Massachusetts, are proposing a Green New Deal designed to eliminate the U.S. carbon footprint by 2030 by focusing on renewable energy. However, U.S. Representative John Shimkus, a Republican from Collinsville, has criticized the Green New Deal as a top-down government requirement that amounts to wealth transfer schemes. Brewpub coming to Uptown Normal. Uptown Normal is getting its own brewpub, and it will be connected to an existing restaurant. D.P. Dough, D-O-U-G-H, is expanding from 121 East Beaufort Street into the former Bill's Key and Lock next door at 127 East Beaufort with a new brewpub. Representatives told Normal's Uptown Design Review Commission on Monday. Their ideas are to have an interior space that is available to showcase the brewing of the beer, said Jeff McMorrow, an associate architect at Bloomington-based EA Architecture and Design. They would brew their beers and serve food from DP Dough. McMorrow, DP Dough owner Ryan Fiala, and his cousin Doug presented an early concept for the project Monday, not including a name or when it might open. Plans are expected to return to the commission before construction. This would have an outdoor patio area that would overlook Beaufort Street and that whole area, a covered patio, and they're going to add solar panels on top, said McMorrow. We're going to gut the whole building, other than the perimeter shell. It's going to be a pretty substantial structure. Town planner Mercy Davison told the commission the town staff is excited about the proposal, but unsure how it fits into the town code, which wasn't written for this. The commission often approves code variances for developments. I love the concept. I think it would be great for that area, said Commissioner Dennis French. Maybe that code issue needs to be addressed in and of itself. The company that owns the DP Dough site, 121 East Beaufort Properties LLC, bought the former Bills in October for $275,000, according to county records. In other business, the commission approved amended plans for the Trail East building to be added to Uptown Circle next year, sending the project back to the Normal City Council for its February 18th meeting. Members signed off on several variances but denied a request to leave out an entrance on the Uptown Circle roundabout. After Commissioner Kyle Glandon, an architect at Bloomington-based Workbench Architects, challenged that. We don't know how the space is going to be used. Why don't we just tell the tenant they have to use it that way? It's written very specifically that that's how the building is supposed to be designed. To me, it seems like we should stick to that intent, said Glandon. Josh Bishop, senior architectural manager with Farnsworth Group, presented the plans on behalf of Iowa developer Bush Construction, which is building the $30 million structure and getting about $8.65 million in future property and sales tax revenues. Those incentives have a value of about $4.7 million in 2019 dollars. Commissioner Dave Bernison, a principal at Farnsworth, abstained from voting on the proposal. Lawmakers turn attention to marijuana. Attention at the State House is expected to begin focusing on one of Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker's top priorities, legalizing recreational marijuana, with the deadline for lawmakers to introduce new bills on Friday. Two key Chicago Democratic lawmakers, Senator Heather Steens and Representative Kelly Cassidy, have met with interest groups around Illinois and are expected to introduce legislation soon. Meanwhile, though, State Representative Carol Ammons, Democrat Urbana, has already introduced a bill that is drawing attention. It would open the door to a much more expansive legal pot industry than most others have envisioned. Ammon's bill, the Cannabis Legalization Equity Act, would allow anyone 21 or older with valid identification to purchase or sell marijuana. Driving under the influence of the drug would still be illegal, and the legislation makes specific mention that only legitimate tax-paying business people would be permitted to sell cannabis. Illinoisans would be allowed to possess as many as 224 grams, or roughly half a pound, of marijuana at a time. It also would allow individuals to grow as many as 24 plants in their own homes for personal consumption, and it would provide for the licensing of cultivation facilities and retail dispensaries. Ammons did not respond to requests for comment Monday. Her measure does include language indicating its purpose would be to allow law enforcement to focus on violent and property crimes, generating revenue for education and other public purposes and individual freedom. We like it. We think that that's more in line with how we treat alcohol, said Dan Lynn, who lobbies for the Illinois chapter of NORML, N-O-R-M-L, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. We also think it would be good for consumers to be able to cultivate their own cannabis, as well as to have a cap on the licensing fees for the new businesses that would be created by that legislation. Ammon's proposal, which has not yet been assigned to a committee, includes a civil penalty, not a criminal one, of $200 to $400 for minors who attempt to buy marijuana illegally. Also in the bill is a requirement that at least 51% of the licenses for cultivating facilities and retail cannabis stores be issued in communities disproportionately harmed by the war on drugs, which the bill defines as census tracts in which more than half the population is African American, Native American, Hispanic, or Latino. Revenue for the state would be generated by a 10% excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana from a cultivating facility to a retail store. Half of that money would be paid into the state's main checking account, while 30% would go to the common school fund. Smaller percentages of the revenue would be distributed to various state retirement systems, the Department of Human Services to fund treatment programs for tobacco, alcohol, and cannabis abuse, and for hiring and training police in drug recognition efforts. There is no official estimate of how much revenue the bill would generate. Any effort toward legalization is certain to meet resistance. Coming out against are the Illinois Catholic Conference, law enforcement groups, including the Chicago Crime Commission, and the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, and the Drug-Free America Foundation. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, February 12th, the 43rd day of 2019, and there are 322 days left in the year. Thought for today. Determine that the thing can and shall be done, and then we shall find the way. Stated by Abraham Lincoln, 1809 to 1865. Road closure. Market Street, from Livingston Street to Henshaw Avenue in Bloomington, is closed to all traffic until further notice, while the crews make street repairs in the area. How time flies. 100 years ago, February 12, 1919, a coalition of interests, commercial, agriculture, religious, etc., has formed the McLean County Wesleyan Association. Its goal is to keep IWU in Bloomington and not allow Springfield to lure it away. Springfield began making overtures to IWU a few months ago. 75 years ago, in 1944, the Lexington schools are serving hot lunches to about 90 students of all ages each day at the high school. The program is a month old now and regarded as a success. Kids sign up a week in advance and their names are checked each time they pick up their silverware. 50 years ago, 1969. Councilman Walter Bittner won the Bloomington mayoral primary, defeating Mayor Robert McGraw by almost a 2-to-1 margin. "I never dreamed it would be like this," Bittner said. He interpreted his wide victory margin as showing that people are ready for change. 25 years ago, 1994, Richard Schulte of Towanda had the winning instant lottery numbers and was chosen to be on a WGN-TV show. There, his winning ticket was drawn as the $100,000 winner before 31% taxes. He and his wife planned to pay off bills and help the kids and grandkids. Today's Flick Fact. Question. An overhead highway sign in downtown Bloomington that directs Illinois 9 and U.S. 150 traffic reads in such a way that any area sports writer or headline writer surely has to love it. Do you know how the sign reads? And the answer? The green overhead highway sign reads, Gibson City, Downs, Leroy. By the way, Gibson City is scheduled to play Leroy tonight in high school basketball, and if Gibson City, Downs, Leroy. Well, that sentence is incomplete, but you can finish it up in your own thoughts. Man faces DUI after crash. A Bloomington man faces a formal charge of driving under the influence of alcohol after his vehicle ran into the living room of a house early Saturday morning in Normal. Police say Jason Neer, 48, was driving in the 100 block of North Blair Drive around 2 a.m. when his car veered off the street and into the home of Seth Bogus and his wife, Natasha Warlow. Nobody at the home was hurt. Neer was transported to a local hospital for non-life-threatening injuries and then booked into the McLean County Jail. He posted $135 bond and was released. Bogus told the Pantograph he and his wife and two children were sleeping in bedrooms in the rear of their home at 113 North Blair Drive in Normal when he said he was awakened by the sound of a crash. Normal fire units arrived on the scene and discovered the car had damaged the house's natural gas service. Crews repaired the damage Saturday. Police said Neer was headed north on Blair when it served across the center line. The car went over the curb and went another 100 feet before crashing through some small trees and lodging itself almost entirely inside the home's living room. Wrecker operators from Joe's Towing and Recovery removed the car from the house. The hole in the wall of the structure measured about 5 feet by 8 feet, said the police. Council grants Kroger more time. Kroger will have another year to complete more than $1 million in infrastructure improvements for a proposed $24.5 million new store in Northeast Bloomington, which the grocery chain placed on hold in January 2018. In a recent letter sent to the city, Kroger asked for the extension to complete public improvements identified in a final plat for the commercial subdivision the City Council approved on February 13, 2017. While the store project is still under review, we want to fulfill the infrastructure commitment we made to the city, Kroger spokesman Eric Halverson said in an email sent Friday to the Pantograph. The City Council granted on Monday the extension for Kroger to add an eastbound right turn lane on College Avenue near Hershey Road, along with sidewalk, sewer, and bus shelter improvements. The measure was approved unanimously without discussion as part of the Council's consent agenda. Kroger proposed the new store, which would be east of Veterans Parkway, in 2016, to replace its store on College Avenue west of Veterans Parkway in Normal, but placed the project on hold last year. The new site is located across the street from the Meyer store, which is located in Normal. City Manager Tim Gleason said that he would support, with council authorization, reinstating economic incentives for Kroger that were voided by city staff prior to Gleason beginning his job in July 2018. Community Development Director Bob Mart and then Interim City Manager Steve Rasmussen sent Kroger a notice in April 2018 terminating the economic incentive agreement because the company did not meet the deadlines for construction to begin. In its final form, the agreement that began in February of 2016 and amended in December of that year called for the city to rebate $2.45 million in sales tax over 10 years in exchange for starting construction on a 128,000 square foot store by January 31st of 2018. In other action Monday night, the council voted unanimously to approve an ordinance creating a technology commission to advise the city on technology matters. The creation of the 7-member commission was requested by Ward 1 Alderman Jamie Mathey. My goal with the technology committee was to bring together some of Bloomington's smartest and brightest folks to talk about what's next, where is technology going, and what the city can do to make use of things that we already have in place regarding wireless and infrastructure and things of that nature, said Mathey. Anyone interested in serving on the committee must submit an application to the city clerk's office. Mayor Terry Renner will review the applications and select those for council approval. The commission will be subject to the Illinois Open Meetings Act, opening all of its meetings to the public. Woman arrested for DUI after hitting shed. A 24-year-old Normal woman faces charges stemming from a Thursday morning crash that destroyed a shed and other property in the 1600 block of Oakland Avenue in Bloomington. Victoria Hodges was initially arrested on charges of driving under the influence of alcohol and drugs, driving with a suspended license, and fleeing, attempting to elude. Formal charges are pending. Police said at 1:30 a.m. Thursday, a McLean County Sheriff's deputy attempted to stop Hodges for a moving violation. Police said that she fled with the vehicle hitting a utility pole and a shed before coming to a stop on a property on Oakland Avenue. Bloomington police were called to assist. Paramedics were called to the scene, but information about whether Hodges was injured was not available on Monday, or if she had any passengers with her. According to McLean County court documents, Hodges pleaded guilty to DUI last year and was sentenced to 24 months supervision and 100 hours of community service. Hospitals release top baby names for 2018. Names say something about a person. That said, here are the most popular baby names for 2018 from area hospitals with mother-baby units. Our thanks to staff members in those units who compiled the lists. OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center Bloomington. Boys' names, 1st through 10th. Owen, Jack, Oliver, Jacob, Finn, Asher, August, Benjamin, Elliot, Logan. Girls, 1 through 10. Sophia, Ruby, Cora, Olivia, Ava, Isla, Hannah, Paisley, Stella, and Charlotte. Advocate Broman, Medical Center Normal. Broman does not compile lists of most popular names, but Stephanie Wollenberg, nurse manager in the mother-baby unit, said, Liam is probably our top boy name for the year. For girls' names, it seems that Emma and Olivia are still near the top of the list, although we did see a resurgence of traditional names like Grace, Nora, Lucy, and Hazel. OSF Healthcare St. James John W. Albrecht Medical Center in Pontiac. For girls, Elizabeth was the most popular. The following names were given to two children each: Paige, Serenity, Abigail, Faith, Emily, Adeline, Isabella, and Evelyn. For boys, Gabriel was the most popular. Liam, Oliver, Xavier, and Logan were given to three boys each, and the following names were given to two boys each: Archer, Silas, Jonathan, Ethan, Alexander, David, Jackson, Justin, and Silas. Also Remington, Emmett, Dominic, Carter, and Bryson. Gibson Area Hospital and Health Services, Gibson City. For girls, Olivia was the most popular, and the following names were given to three children each: Ella, Lily, Mila, and Scarlett. For boys, Elijah, Jackson, and Riker were given to three boys each. Christopher, Connor, Cooper, Jack, and Xander were given to two boys each. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. For boys and girls combined, Ava, Isaiah, Brielle, Elijah, Hannah, Grayson, Isabella, Isaac, Nova, and Jackson. Decatur Memorial Hospital in Decatur. For girls, Ava, Addison, and then the following names were given to three girls each: Madison, Amelia, Hazel, Bella, Hadley, Elizabeth, Grace, and Scarlett. For boys, Carter and Jackson were tied with five, and then the following names were given to four boys each: Benjamin, Oliver, Graham, Brody, Knox, Bryson, Henry, and Grayson. Birth Center of Bloomington Normal in Bloomington. We had two babies named John and two babies named Ryder in 2018, said manager Stephanie Harper. No other names were duplicates. Abraham Lincoln Memorial Hospital in Lincoln does not compile baby names. Here is a review by Patricia S. Stiller of the play Marjorie Prime, playing at the Heartland Theater. In his thought-provoking drama, Marjorie Prime, playwright Jordan Harrison supposes what life, actual or otherwise, might be like in the year 2062. Will the advances of technology and the capabilities of artificial intelligence render us, as has been predicted, obsolete? Or will humans, in their quest to be immortal, manipulate technology in order to live forever? Marjorie, a sublime octogenarian, sits clinging to the remnants of her fading memories with the twisted yet graceful fingers of a violinist. With her is a handsome young man she calls Walter, who gently guides her thoughts by relating stories of shared experiences. His even and pleasant demeanor is a comfort to Marjorie, but there is something odd about him. Eventually, we realize this Walter is in fact a computerized version, or prime, of her late husband Walter, though a younger version, perhaps reflective of a kinder, gentler time in their life together. As Marjorie's memories fade, Walter Prime edits them so that he can always share a version with her that brings peace. This is a welcome respite from the exchanges that she has with her middle-aged daughter, Tess. To put it gently, Tess is on edge. Her growing concerns about her mother's declining health, coupled with her worries over her own adult children's questionable life choices, give her hypersensitivity. She admits to her husband, John, that her companion is unsettling. Time marches on, and soon the dynamics between Tess and Marjorie change, and they become more even and pleasant. Spoiler alert, Tess has her own computerized companion now, a Marjorie Prime. As mother and daughter talk, Tess is able to finally say things she could never say before. Under the sensitive direction of Don LaCasse, Marjorie Prime is an experience that lingers, meandering a stream of consciousness. It's an eloquent exploration of family dynamics that offers an honest look at the emotional devastation one must face when watching a loved one slip away. Despite the suggestion that technology could replace us all, the play's foundation is all too human. Kathleen Kirk is captivating as Marjorie. She draws us in and holds us close. From her first moments on stage, which she shares with a company of Heartland Theater all-stars, including John Bowen, wonderfully eerie as Walter, Reese Lovell as John, and Devin Lovell, who breaks your heart, as Tess. It's playing at the Heartland Theater in Normal, February 14th to the 16th, 21st to the 23rd. And this is the end of the first half hour.